stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on the internet. It's time for Sam in the Morning with Bruschetta, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Friday. It's February 17th. We're back live.
Another Friday.
Another
Yay!
Friday. There you go.
Thank God it's Friday.
You're starting to like those Fridays.
I know. You know, I'm not drinking right now. I've stopped.
Really?
I'm
going
to be healthy for the next 2 weeks. I'm like busting my butt.
Uh-huh.
I literally have to like get in shape for March 1st.
For that
this shoot thing. Yes.
Yeah.
So guess what? I went running this morning.
You did?
I did.
Wow. You must have gotten up early then.
I did. I didn't sleep well last night, but it was fine. Yeah. Like I got up early. I took the dog for a run. I feel good.
Good.
Yeah. I did P90X yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Like you can kind of see my muscles.
No, P90X? What's that? A machine?
P90X. No. You never heard of P90X?
No.
Oh my God. It's amazing. It's this program you do for like 90 days. And I started it like, I don't know, a year ago, I guess. And I did 2 weeks and then I was over it. But that's what I do. But I looked great in the 2 weeks that I did it.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So I have 2 weeks to like, you know, get in shape and tiny. So I'm starting it again.
Can you manage not drinking for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I hope you won't get bitchy or anything or irritable.
But then it's also fun.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited for the weekend. Yeah. There's like a lot of good things. I was going to go camping.
Yeah, camping sounds good.
Yeah, I was thinking of going camping, but I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, it's great weather for camping and I think you'll have fun. Yeah.
Yeah. No rain.
No rain.
Damn you and the damn rain.
Yeah. Remember, it was raining 2 days ago.
Yeah, I remember.
And windy and everything. And, that wasn't a good thing because we went to a funeral. You know, we buried my uncle 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't show up yesterday. I just kind of fell down,
okay.
You know?
No, I understand. Yeah.
So at any rate, we went and the cemetery is like in Simi Valley and everything is open there. The wind was blowing us off. There was like 45 degrees outside and raining.
Wow.
Imagine standing outside trying to bury somebody
in
this kind of weather. You
know? That's kind of gnarly.
Yeah.
Aw. Well, I'm sorry. Well, I hope you're like you're back and you're yourself today, kind of, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, he was, in a way, it was good because he's been suffering for a long time and stuff. You know, he was like half a vegetable for like 3 years. So,
yeah.
So it's good for him. It's good for everyone.
How do you feel about that? Like, I don't ever want to be a vegetable.
Right.
And like, remember the whole Kevorkian thing? I'm sorry, that is so weird that I'm bringing this up. But I mean,
no, it's not. People talk about it all the time.
I don't think I'd want to. I don't know what I would not want to be a vegetable. I'd be like, pull the damn plug. Like, I would pay someone to do it. I'd have it like written down. Like,
I know. I've been thinking about it because I'm seeing like older people going through this.
Yeah.
And they wish they were dead. But they're not.
Just walk in the street.
Yeah.
And wait for a bus.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But you know,
then, on the train track.
Then it's suicide. And people have all kinds of beliefs about.
No, I agree.
Know,
I
things
know.
Like that and stuff. So.
Yeah.
I don't know, but so we don't get to choose when we go, you know, so we just hope that we'll go fast and without suffering.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, on a brighter note, what do you got planned for this weekend? Anything?
Nothing special, no, but you know, we're going to take it like a couple weeks off in March, the end of March.
Oh, yeah?
Because I got to go to Israel for my brother's wedding.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know. Thanks for telling me now.
Yeah, well, it's still almost a couple months
away.
I'll
plan a vacation.
Yeah,
only a couple
exactly.
months. March is in like, are you kidding?
Well,
like
it's going to be like March 27th or
got
something.
Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll go to Florida then.
Yeah, you might as well.
I will.
Go see your mom, your parents.
Rejuvenate. Get away. I love Naples. Naples is so amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Anyway.
Naples it is.
Naples.
Okay, well, we've got two great guests in the studio, very special guests. Why don't you go ahead and introduce them to us?
Well, we have Dave Tillman and Dwayne here today.
Yes, welcome,
Woo!
Welcome. Two friends of
Dwayne
the station.
Journey, yes.
Friends of the station,
friends of the station, friends of us, friends of the show.
And friends of yours.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they just finished an awesome movie. I'll let you guys talk about it because if you want to know.
Well, we have to do a little shout out for Dwayne because it's his birthday today.
Oh, my God, I see that.
Happy birthday, Dwayne.
Yes, I had to make him hate me all day today.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome.
You see, he honors us by being here on his birthday.
Yay. Absolutely. What a better way to spend a birthday, right?
There you go. There you go.
I would have brought you a cupcake or something if I had known.
Well, see, now what's going to happen is I'm going to get into the editing room right after this with my staff. I'm sure they're listening, and they're gonna give me
gonna
a hard time all day long.
Well, it is his birthday.
Nice.
Yes,
yes,
it is. Yes, it is.
You see how fast I'm on my feet?
You are.
I have to find the clip. It's not even on the screen.
Like, wow.
I was like, was this planned? Like, I didn't know.
No, not at all.
No, that's spontaneous. That's amazing. Wow. Well, the film is called Black Forest, Hansel and Gretel and the 420 Witch.
I love
it. For those of you who don't know what 420 is, it's a police call number for marijuana.
Yeah. Go smoke one.
Yes. A lot of people go, oh, that's funny. And then they don't realize exactly. Yeah. They know it's supposed to be funny sounding. Yeah. And then when I tell them, oh, that is funny.
So the 420 is the way, just because of the way the cops call it, or is it because it was like a proposition or something?
it's a police code.
Yeah.
It's a code they use over the radio, and now it's become a kind of a vernacular for...
Yeah, like I have a 420 lifestyle or something.
That's
exactly.
Right. That's right.
Exactly.
It's 420. Yeah. I gotta go. It's
420 somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And so in this version, it's kind of a modern retelling of the Hansel and Gretel story.
Oh, okay.
But in this version, she uses, instead of gingerbread and candy to lure little kids, she uses marijuana, she uses pot to lure teenagers, figuring, I'll find one or two that nobody really cares about because they're potheads, and then she kills them, steals their youth, and you know,
eats them.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because she's got the munchies.
Because she's got the munchies.
Exactly. She's got the munchies.
Exactly right.
So it's a comedy, obviously, but is it like gruesome as well because of the eating?
Very gruesome.
Yeah, it's very gruesome. It's a horror comedy.
Oh, I like it.
So it's definitely a horror retelling of the story.
I'm so excited to see this.
Wow, that'll be cool.
Yeah.
So now, how did the idea come? It's your idea, pretty much, Dwayne?
Well, no, actually, it's not. It's David's script. It was my idea. We were together with a very good friend of ours, James Cotton, who's a producer, and he produces predominantly horror films. And we were talking about. I was saying, I want to direct a horror film next, and would love to do one. And so we kind of turned to our friend David, the writer, and said, "Hey, come up with something good and do it now."
A lot of people say, "No, guys, were you smoking when this happened?" No, we're not smoking, but we were drinking.
We were drinking. There was a lot of alcohol involved.
And James said, "Well, if you're going to do a small, you know, low-budget film, you want to kind of do a knockoff of a bigger film.
Yeah.
That way it can sell to Sci-Fi or sell on DVD faster if they think, oh, that must be the Thor movie. It's something else." And I was aware of the other Hansel and Gretel movie with Jeremy Renner. And so they're talking, and suddenly this idea just jumps in my head. It's the title first, you know, Hansel and Gretel and the 420 Witch. And I turn to the guys and say the name, and I said, "Yeah, the witch uses pot to lure teenagers in so she can eat them and steal their youth." And they stopped mid-beer and looked at each other and went, "Oh, my God, that's it." And then we just started kind of coming up with some ideas, you know, following the basic storyline, you know, that's only we're going to use teenagers because that's horror movies.
Yeah.
And the idea kind of grew from there. Then in the proverbial Hollywood way, Dwayne and James were at a meeting. I'll let you take over from
there. Yeah, we were at a meeting literally the next day with a group of people, and we were talking about a different film. And it was one of those, you know, kind of stories of as you're getting up to walk out of the room, practically, they say, "Well, what else you got?"
Yeah.
And we just kind of threw it over our shoulder because it wasn't really a script. It wasn't really an idea.
Mm-hmm.
It was just this thing floating out there. And they immediately responded. And they said, "Oh, tell us about it." And basically, I kind of lied. and started spewing out anything that I could think of to come out of my. Oh, there's zombies and it grows
and
under
and
the.
She's got a hellhound. He calls me later on like a hellhound. Yeah. That's not in the original story.
Yeah. Every horror film cliche was there, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So
yeah,
funny.
Every
like,
horror.
And there's vampires
every horror. If I could have got one in, I would have.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
And you know what basically what happened was they actually responded very well.
Yeah.
And James and I kind of left the room going, wow, we actually might have something. So we called another company, and both companies responded very positively and instantly, literally within hours, called back and said, we are very interested.
Wow.
And then they both said, we'd love to read the script.
You're like,
and I'm sure somebody from there will hear this today and go, you lied to us. Because basically what I said was, I'm in a rewrite. David's in a rewrite. Can you give me 2 weeks? And they went, sure, sure.
And at that point, you hadn't had any script.
No. There was no script. So I was actually doing my other job down in San Diego and get this call from Dwayne saying, you have to have this script in 2 weeks. And I'm like, what? I'm busy for the whole weekend. Well, like, today.
David was actually in the middle of writing another movie for because David gets a lot of paid writing gigs, you know, writer for hire. And David was in the middle of writing a comedy. And I said, you have to write this horror now, and here's all of the stuff that came out of my mouth in this meeting. Good luck. And you have 14 days.
Wow.
And, of course, he was already in that comedy vein from writing that movie, and he literally had to kind of push that aside for 14 days and slam this thing out. And literally they read it, and they said, perfect, let's go.
So he came through within a couple of weeks.
I came through literally in 2 weeks. Wow. And we originally were thinking that it would be a very low-budget horror film. That's why we're kind of going with some of the low-budget cliche ideas. And fortunately, it turned out to be better than anybody anticipated, and they gave us a lot more money to do it.
That's great.
Thinking it had real potential for a theatrical release.
Right.
Now, I have no judgment, and I've certainly done more than just inhale, but I'm not a connoisseur of things. So I had to watch, while I'm writing the script, my only break time, I would watch Weeds on Netflix.
And
I
watched all show.
Yes. So I was learning, you know, all about stuff. Well, by the end, I totally wanted to get stoned, but there was no time because I had to write the script. But
you would never have finished it in 14 days.
Yeah, I would never finish it, that's for sure.
Wow.
So that's a good idea, you know. Now, is there any problem with teens smoking pot in the movie and stuff like that?
No, not really. I mean, you know, we do show teens smoking pot in the movie.
Right.
It's actually kind of, it's weird because one of the things that the film is, it's got three different kind of markets. You know, it's a comedy, so people who like comedies will go. It is definitely a horror.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely horror elements to it. We do a lot of gross stuff to people. So it's got the horror fan base, and it does have kind of a stoner, you know, it is, you know, a movie that I think they're going to enjoy. But like, honestly, it's actually kind of an anti-drug, anti-smoking movie.
Really?
Because, well, when you stop and think about it, everybody who smokes get killed.
Oh.
So there is that little element.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's
just saying.
So we're kind of saying you smoke drugs and some witch is going to come along and cut you up and kill you.
Yeah.
So it'll be like a Harold and Kumar crowd that would definitely watch it as well. But then again, they'd be like, oh my God, I'm never smoking again.
Well, actually,
certainly not from many little old ladies.
Yes, you don't get it from a little old lady in Pasadena.
She lives in Pasadena.
She lives in Pasadena.
Yes, she lives in Pasadena. Yeah. So, because you know, when you're trying to write that much and you're only watching Weeds, you know, and eating chocolate chip cookies.
What kind of cookies?
Cookies. Then a lot of funny stuff comes to your head, and you're like, oh, God, I hope other people think this is funny. So I had the thought, well, I want to set it here in LA because it'll be easier for us to shoot.
Right.
And then as I'm writing it, they, you know, they have to be stoned, and I was trying to think of like some, you know, things that may have happened in my past or not. I was thinking about the little old lady from Pasadena song, you know, the Beach Boys. So I put that in as a reference in the film. So, you know, he said, oh, it's a little lady, you know, in Pasadena, she's growing this stuff. And then Gretel's singing, she's a little old lady from Pasadena. Grow, granny, grow, granny, grow, granny, grow.
Oh my God.
And he's like, well, as it turns out, you know, the James was like, I don't know if anybody's going to really, you know, young people are going to get the Beach Boys reference and stuff. Well, it turns out this year is the 50th anniversary of the Beach Boys.
Oh, right.
They had a 10-minute segment on the Grammys.
Oh,
the Beach Boys singing.
I'm
like, and they're doing some other reunion tour. I'm like, this is
the perfect timing.
The perfect timing.
Wow.
Exactly.
Good for you. That's awesome. Can be more perfect.
Yeah. So you've been writing for a long time, right, David?
Yeah, I've been writing. I started writing in 1999, actually. Mm-hmm. And the past couple years have been really good for me. Mm-hmm. I connected up with another company called Wingspan Pictures. I had done a movie for them as an actor. And then Dwayne and I were in development on another movie I have called Rainbow Harbor that he's supposed to direct. And they came to a public read-through that we had. They liked my writing style. They hired me to write a short film for them called Love Is All You Need, which is an anti-gay teen bullying movie. Now, that little short film has gone on to win like 10 film festivals, wow. Best Short. We wrote a feature version of it now, and it's out to talent. We just got an email or text last night saying the talent is really responding, and
that's
so
great.
Hopefully we'll be shooting that this year.
That's amazing.
So then I wrote a bunch of other stuff for them. So the last couple of years have been great writing years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, very productive for you.
Very productive, yeah.
Now, Dwayne, you're more of a director, right? You don't write.
No, I don't write.
Right.
I can barely spell.
No, he's not kidding.
We're making up stories, at least.
Yeah, that's exactly.
But so do you find it's easy for you to direct Dave's script?
Yeah, I think that when you look at a script as a director, you look at what is the script, what is the storyteller saying, and you try to... I mean, the nice thing about working with David is that he is, he's a friend, and I can communicate with him openly, but I deal kind of with David like I deal with any other writer, you know, and every writer in America just went, what? what does that mean?
Really?
But,
and I thought those times were special.
It's great, because we have a shorthand, and we've worked together for years, and so we kind of can talk and in a very honest and open area, and I can say, look, I just don't get that. Explain what you mean. And I think it actually creates, from our point of view, it creates... I like having David on the set. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of directors don't like having a writer on the set.
Oh, really?
Do they interfere or something?
Or what?
Well, a lot of directors... You know what? I mean, it used to be you never let a writer on the set when you were directing. It's just, just the way it was, because, you've got another voice over your shoulder going, but that's not what I meant.
Yeah.
And the director's going, yeah, but that's what I'm doing.
Right.
And that's how I'm interpreting it, And... but I actually enjoyed having David there for the whole thing, and he was on the set all the time, and it was a nice collaboration.
Yeah, awesome. And when did you start directing?
This is my first feature.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I have another one coming up right after it.
But you've been making films for a long time.
For a long time. I've been doing a lot of commercials, and I've been in the industry for almost 30 years.
Wow.
Right around 30 years or so.
Yeah. More now.
31.
31.
I've been doing a lot of different things. I started out, in a lot of different areas. I've been a line producer. I've been a producer, a first AD, and
great.
Directed
so you've,
commercials.
Gaffer, you've all done the things. Gamut of,
well-rounded.
Of things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so where are you originally from? Where were you born?
San Diego.
Oh, really? So you're in California.
Yeah, it was a big move.
What?
Yeah. All 2 hours.
And you grew up there?
Yeah.
And so then you moved to L.A. Why? Because of the movie?
For films. I moved to L.A. so that I could, it was one of those kids that would sit and watch the movie on a Saturday and go to 5 movies and not play baseball and hang around just in the movie theaters. And, I was instantly a film geek at 10 years old. I could tell you what was, they shot that with a 35mm. I was just one of those kids.
Yeah. Aww. Now, have you seen any transformation in filmmaking in the past, let's say, 30 years
started? Oh, yeah.
No, it stayed the same.
Well, I don't know. What the hell do I know about film? Like,
no, absolutely.
Shut up.
They're like, there's HD now. I don't know. I mean, okay.
Back when I started, it was black and white with a crank camera.
No. Yeah, right.
Absolutely. I mean, video is actually, we shot this on a what they call a red camera, which is a video chip
HD
camera.
Quality.
It's,
mm-hmm.
it's an HD video chip. It was the red matrix, I think they call it. And so it does change a lot of things. It changes a lot of things in the post when you're done shooting the film, how you mm-hmm. handle it in the post process, how you can color time it. Gives you a lot of latitude to do a lot of things coloring.
Right.
And in the post process.
Right. Yeah. The whole editing part is a lot easier than with film, right?
It's not necessarily. Well, yes and no. It's that you can do a lot more. You have a lot more latitude. It's what we called. It's not baked in.
Right.
When we used to shoot something on film, if you decided to do a lot of blue on the lights when you shot, you could do some color correction. but not a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of baked it in. You made that decision. You're stuck. Right. It's amazing now I can sit in this big, giant room with this color guy and basically say, listen, can you take the white wall and make it green?
Really? So they just do that.
You can do it in a heartbeat.
Wow.
So that's one of the fascinating things that shooting in video has allowed more than what we used to be able to do in film.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, when you do like in HD, I mean, can you get like close to film, the film feel of it?
That's been the trick for the last few years is trying to design that. Because what happens when you shoot a movie that's in video, it's very crisp.
Right.
And then there's no blurring of the lines.
Right. No graininess.
There's no graininess. Everything is really crisp, and it kind of looks like you're watching, you know, Cops.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Which is great if you're watching... You know, a show like that, right, if you're watching a reality show, but on a big, giant screen, it's so sharp, it's actually kind of disconcerting. Mm-hmm. And there are programs now, computer programs, and some of these cameras are now designed to kind of add blur factor.
Right. Mm.
And to kind of soften the edges a little bit to give us what we're more traditionally used to in film.
Cool. Is it cheaper to do it with video?
Yes.
It is.
It is in the end. Yeah. It's just a, if you're going to finish in what we call a DI finish, a digital intermediate finish anyway, so you can have all this cool toys to play with. Mm-hmm. On the post end, you're going to wind up shooting it in film, then you're going to wind up turning it into video.
Into video for the editing.
You're going to wind up turning it digital, actually. You're going to turn it into a video, like a videotape. You're going to turn it into a digital image in a big machine, and then you're going to play with it. Well, now you've added a cost.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Plus, film itself is very expensive to process.
Yeah.
Whereas video, we take the chip out of the back of the camera and we go over here, we stick it in another computer, and you know, you're done.
Well, the other major advantage, too, is in terms of the takes. Like, normally in film, they would say, okay, well, we're going to print takes 2 and 4 because those were the best, because the cost of printing it.
Right.
Well, now you've got all 4 takes, you know, that you can look at. And think, oh, we're going to take the line from here, we're going to take a little section here, or I like that little grimace there.
Mm-hmm.
You can do
that
all in digital format.
Absolutely. So it did speed up, it does kind of speed up the filming process.
Right.
And we had a lot of, you know, heavy makeup in this show, and animals, and, you know, a lot of that kind of
children,
stuff.
Children, all the things you're not supposed to have in the movie.
thank you, David. Thank you for writing that in there.
And
yes, and so we did have a lot of those elements. And when you are shooting traditionally on film cameras, which a lot of movies are still shot that way, and TV shows, you wind up literally just saying, okay, I only want to print take 1, 4, and 7, because to print them all is just so expensive.
Very expensive. Right.
But if it you know what David's saying is, if it's in video element, you can actually just say, well, those are the ones I want to look at first, but they're all going to be in the computer.
Right.
So if I'm like, okay, that the way Laura looked at, you know, looked at Molly in the film, I love that look, but it's not the best take, but I want the look.
Right.
Then I can go and grab just that look and put it in the film. So
that sounds good.
Yeah.
Now, how long does it take, the film you just made, the Hansel and Gretel thing, how long did it take from the time you wrote the script until you completed?
Again, this was an anomaly, in that we got a green light for the script in August, we think, sort of.
Right, I mean, that's when the producers greenlit.
Yeah, that's when we started going, okay, it's going to happen. And then we shot in January. So I wrote it in June, and we shot in January, so 6 months.
Oh, I see. So it's very fresh still.
Yeah.
This is very fast. Right. I mean, this is really, for a film, films usually take a year or two to kind of get even going.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, I've got another one that I will shoot at the end of this year that's been in for, you know, 16 months already.
Right.
In development and funding and da-da-da. And our producers on this one wanted to move quick.
Yeah.
And so we're you know, done shooting. We shot for 21 days.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we'll
do. Are you working on post production?
We're working on the post production, which will take about 3 months.
When do you think it'll be released?
I'm not sure of the exact release date yet. Mark and the guys, the producers, have not really kind of given me that.
They've got a couple of suitors, people that are interested in U.S. distribution.
Right. And they have sold it. And everybody's good to go. It's just from my understanding is I don't know the exact date.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the distributor is going to do that kind of later. When they actually see the finished film, they'll go, okay, you know what, this is a summer release. Or, no, let's keep this for, you know, Halloween or something like that.
Awesome, so it's Halloween.
I would love a Halloween release.
That'd be rad.
Actually, the release they were originally, they kind of wanted, they said, we'd love to do a screening on April 20th. Can you have it done?
420.
That's what wow, that would be awesome.
And I kind of looked at them and said, what, are you crazy?
Like, oh, my God, yeah.
That's like now. That's right around the corner.
Yeah.
From a post standpoint,
right,
that's really fast. We still may actually try to do that. We are trying to do it, but there is a lot of visual effects and a lot of music to go and all of that kind of stuff, so it does take a little time.
Right, You know what amazes me about filming a movie is sometimes there's like really elaborate shots. You know they took like 2 days to shoot it, and it's like 2 seconds on the screen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, that is exactly it.
Mm-hmm. You know, or sometimes they take a shot like from really up high and stuff, you know, like looking down. And you know it took a long time to film this, and it's only for 2 seconds, you know? You go, they didn't have to do that, but that's what a film is about.
Right, it looks amazing.
You know,
Right.
There's a we like to say there's a lot of setup for a little bit of bang, you know. And we had a lot of makeup on this and a lot of special effects, and we had a great makeup team, Vincent Castini. Did I slaughter his name? That's right,
Castini.
And his team, and they're really, really good. And they but it took like 6 hours to get Lara Flynn Boyle into her makeup sometimes.
Wow.
And you know, take five, 6 hours.
Let me explain why that is. Since she steals their youth, when we first meet her, she's the little old lady from Pasadena. She's like 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she sucks the youth out of the first victim, then she drops down to about 60.
Okay.
And then she drops down to 40.
Ah.
Yeah.
So they had extensive makeup. And Lara Flynn Boyle is the star.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I didn't realize that. Do you have a big name star?
Yeah, oh, we have several.
Star. Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Carrie Elwes is also
Carrie Elwes. Molly Quinn, who's on Castle, plays Gretel.
Okay.
And then Michael Welsh from the Twilight movies and a lot of other films. This kid's done so much stuff. It plays Hansel.
And Yancey Butler, who was on the TV show Witchblade.
Witchblade.
And then Lachlan Monroe, who is a, he's been in a ton of movies. Like when you see him, you're like, oh my God, I know that guy.
Yeah, this guy's been in over 100 films.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he's
so we're really lucky, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go on. So you're talking about her role.
Right. So that's why she would be in makeup for, you know, 6 hours trying to get into this old lady makeup so that it would look real and you could really buy that she's this old woman.
Wow.
And Lara brought a real girlishness to the old woman, you know, kind of a little bit senile because in actuality she's like 400 years old.
Right.
So there's a little spot where you'll see that.
But, you know, and what I was saying was that we would take 6 hours to get her in makeup and then shoot her for 30 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, we're done now.
Oh, my God.
And,
how long does it take to get out of the makeup?
It took another about an hour and a half.
Yeah. Oh, because Lara's skin is so, it's really, she has a lot of allergies to what normally would use.
Oh,
so they'd be very delicate with the stuff. And they used something that they thought would be okay the second day. First day they did stuff, everything was fine. Second day, when they went to take the mask off, it was pulling her skin off, the first layer.
Yeah, it was
poor thing.
You know, I mean, I got to say, real trooper about it. Because, you know, I mean, it was not a comfortable thing.
Wow.
And, but you know what? She was a real trooper about
That's
it.
Great.
And we did put her through a lot of different stages of makeup.
Wow.
And a lot of other actors as well.
It's not easy being an actor, you know. Some people go, oh, I can do it, you know, no problem. But there's a lot of hard work.
There is. And especially in films like this where, you know, we have, you know, some of our younger actors were saying, okay, now go cut their throat, please. And they would, you know, go away for an hour. An hour and a half and sit with their head back in a makeup chair while these special effects artists, who were fantastic, would apply this, you know, throat cutting makeup and all this stuff with blood tubes and all of this, and then, you know, bring them back in and say, okay, now that's really uncomfortable. Act.
Yeah.
But you know I when I did horror films, I love being in the gore and all the makeup and everything. I know it's really great. But you get more in the character, you get more, you know, it just feels, I mean, I don't mind it at all.
Yeah.
So yes, it's a pain in the butt to sit there forever for makeup, but like you get so more involved in the scene.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's not something that you're gonna, you know, you know, unless you're doing a horror film or a film where you get shot or killed or, you know, an arm hacked off, how often do you get to, you know,
exactly.
that kind
you
of
get
stuff?
To do it, right?
Exactly.
Which I'm always the dead girl in everything I do, so kind of a lot. But anyway.
I have dead people in my next film. I'll be calling
awesome.
You then.
Thanks. I appreciate
really
it.
Did.
Yes.
Oh, man.
He's a giver.
David, where are you originally from?
Actually, West Virginia.
Really?
In the coal mining regions.
Wow, yeah. There's actually people living there.
There's actually a few people there, yes. That's why I'm living here. Yeah. No, it's a great place to be born and raised, and it's a beautiful place to visit.
And, yeah. And go skiing.
You've got skiing. Great, absolutely.
Yeah, really? I used to go skiing there.
Oh, wow.
I'm not from Maryland, so.
Oh, well, right. Yeah. Actually, I'm developing a TV show idea that's set in West Virginia now.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So we just had the idea years ago, and now it's come back around, and a friend of mine who's was a writer on The Closer. Mm-hmm. He and I are developing the project together, so you know, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Nice. Now, how do you work with someone else on writing? I always wonder about that. I mean, do you guys actually sit together and decide what each line is going to be, or does one do a certain part of it and the other one picks?
You know, every partnership is different, and I have worked with different partners along the way. So Ken and I are going to develop that. You know, how are we going to go? He knows television, and I'm primarily features. So I'm going to have to learn the television style from him.
Right.
So each writer has a particular style. So I'll probably meld mine to his because he knows the market.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. But one of the things that, you know, Ken's really great with thinking things out and plot development, that kind of stuff. And I'm really great with character development and having a quirkiness to characters that can bring them to life. And so with this new idea that we have, we think those things will meld well together.
Awesome. Wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
That's really awesome.
So you're like being really productive with your writing and everything.
Yeah.
Huh?
I'm doing my best. I have another Fractured Fairy Tale idea that I'm working on right now. that's not a gore fest. Although when I was writing this one, and I would say, "Oh, isn't this funny?" to Dwayne, he'd be like, "Yeah, but where's the horror? Where's the horror?" So with the first meeting we had with Vincent and his team, and they've done a lot of horror movies, okay? Mm-hmm. So I get introduced as the writer, and Vincent goes, "Dude, you're sick." I was reading the thing. There's some of the grossest stuff I've ever seen. I'm like, "No, I'm a comedy writer, really." Really? So I'm thinking, wow, I grossed out the guy who's king of grossed out stuff. So
that's pretty awesome.
There's an element that's pretty disgusting in this movie. That, like, okay, there we go. Yeah. And then when we were in the casting period, the casting director said, "Well, you can get an actor to do this, and you can get an actor to do that, but you can't get him to do both in the movie. So you just have to wait and see what that is."
Yeah, you're not going to tell what those are.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell what those elements are. You know, spoiler alert.
Okay, but,
And I think they were pretty much right.
They were right. You know? They were right. She was absolutely right. But and when the producers sat down, James, who had helped us put this together, and Mark Morgan and Brett Hudson and Bill Beasley. And we all sat down and
Jonathan Heine. Now I've said everybody's Heine. Names.
Yeah, now we've done the whole thing.
Eric's last name.
Eric Thompson.
Eric Thompson. We'd like to thank the Academy.
Who else would you like to thank? Your mom, your dad.
Well, that went on forever, didn't it? There's a lot of producers on this thing.
There's a lot of producers, yeah.
And when we sat down with them, they were like, "We like the comedy element. We really want to make sure the horror element sells as well."
Right.
And you know, I said, "Have finished reading it." And and they went, "Okay, yeah, we're good."
Yeah. Let's just say she does some interesting things to get her rolling papers.
Okay. Oh, God, I'm only imagining right now what that could possibly be, story-wise.
You're probably right.
Okay. Yes. Awesome. Kind of gnarly, if I think I'm right.
Is this like a modern-day version, or are they still in the forest?
No,
it's modern-day.
This absolutely happens right now in Pasadena.
I see.
And that's one of the things that I really was attracted to, what the script that David then wrote, which, by the way, the shooting script was only about 3 revisions away from the script that he did in 14 days, which, you know, for a script on a film is very good, I have to say. You know, normally you get like 25 revisions before you start shooting.
Nice job.
But one of the things that I liked about it is it had this kind of David Lynchian feeling of what's happening on the other side of the hedge. My house, it's all nice and safe and flowers and birds and kids playing on the front of the block. But if you go behind that hedge, there's a witch killing teenagers, you know, and that's what makes it real fun, is that it is a modern telling.
Right.
Where'd you guys find the house?
Oh, well, as a matter of fact, it's an amazing house.
Okay.
I have a friend who's a locations manager, John Grant, and I called John up and said, "Hey, we're going to make this movie, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, at that point anyway." And I described, you know, I gave him the log line. He's like, "I've got the perfect house." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So he goes, "No, go on my website, take a look at these pictures." Oh, my God, it looks stunning. It was this kind of German-esque Tudor-style house. And so we go to take a look at the location. And we're walking through the place, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is great, And then Dwayne turns to me and goes, did you come here first and then write the script? Because I had very specific things. Like it had to have a multi-room basement. It had to have three levels so that, you know, the areas would be big entranceway. And also there's a big fight scene that takes place on a stairway that goes up around the hallway that you can see from the downstairs.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Some very specific things. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, this will be fun to write. And then this house had nearly everything that we had wanted for it. It was amazing.
It was actually amazing. Wow. It was one of the few homes I've ever been in California. It was built in 1890.
Oh, wow.
And it's big, beautiful stone, kind of late Victorian. And one of the tone of the movie that I wanted to keep was I wanted to keep the German kind of wink-wink, nudge-nudge to the original story, but in a modern tone. So when I, you know, our wardrobe is very modern. It's kind of boho, that new boho look that girls are into. Yeah, there you go. And we take that boho and we take it a little bit more to an extreme in some cases with Gretel's character. But I wanted to keep that kind of in everything. I wanted to keep a little bit German, but modern.
Yeah.
And this house just fit perfectly. And it was one of the few houses I've ever seen that had literally a 6 or 7 room basement out of stone and, you know, down in this building.
That's really hard to find, too, especially in L.A. basements.
In California.
Yeah, basements.
Really crazy. Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh, well, we'll build this on a soundstage.
Well, and believe me, James was very happy when we walked in, and he went, oh, good, I don't have to build it. You know, that made James happy.
But we did build the pot forest on stage.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yes. So again, taking, I think one of the reasons why it was so easy to write is we all know the story of Hansel and Gretel.
Right.
We grew up with that. So, you know, you have an amazing story structure that's in our psyche, in our consciousness. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I wanted to simulate many of the elements from the original story. So, of course, now where are we going to get the forest?
Right.
Okay, well, since she's growing, we created a pot forest that is this vast expanse. If you remember in the original Indiana Jones movie, when they're taking the ark into the big warehouse, we want to kind of have that feel to this pot forest.
Right.
So the pot plants are like 14 feet tall.
Oh my God.
It's underground.
Wow.
Yeah, but don't give away too much about what happens under there.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's
right.
But it was one of the amazing elements, and we shot that for 4 days on
four
a soundstage.
4 or 5 days, yeah, over on a big soundstage.
Oh, cool.
Now, that's interesting. How do people find houses, like, for a film? Do people have other people that actually offer their houses, and then you go through that?
Yes, there are services, but we have a guy named a location manager. Each film hires its own.
I'm just wondering how he finds the places.
A lot of times, just through their experience in past, you know, more experienced location manager, the more choices you're going to get to look at. But also there are services that people who want to rent their house out to films, if you're crazy, will call or need the money badly. Right. We'll call and you know, register with these services, and these services kind of act like an agent for you. And if somebody does decide to film on your property, then the agency puts kind of a babysitter with the film to protect and make sure, not that anything normally goes wrong, but just to be there as a representative for the owner. And then, you know, if it's like a house, we generally take that person and we take the family or whatever and put them in a hotel for 3 or 4 days while we shoot. Because you are not going to get rest with 120 film crew running around your house. So that's kind of how that works.
But in this case, Mr. Tung, the owner of the home, loves having people around. He's retired. He's got this big, beautiful house. And he was there 24/7 with us.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And watching everything come. And then he came to the soundstage to see the next part done.
Oh, that's
cool. Really, really nice man.
That's cool.
Yeah.
How was the casting process? Like, how did you guys, do you already have in mind who you wanted kind of thing? Or?
Well, we, you know, part of it is when you're working with, you know, when you're working with producers, you know, they know who they kind of want, just like a studio or anybody else. And, these guys, you know, have been around. And so they know who they kind of wanted for sales purposes and who's going to get this into the market.
Right.
So I have my list as a director, and I go sit down with them, and they have their list, and we kind of compare. And it's kind of a team effort to see who's going to do the best for us and who fits the part.
Right.
I definitely had a list going in. And also I have a casting director, Ricky Masler, who she had a list, you know, that's what they do. Mm-hmm. You know, you give them a script and they're going to go, trust me, this is who you want.
Right.
And so it's kind of a team effort thing. We come up with a list and then we go out to those actors and see who would be interested.
Yeah. Wow. So now I wanted to ask you about the script. Sometimes, or especially in this movie, you wrote some crazy things, you know. Do people sometimes wonder if that's like part of your personality? I mean, how does your mind even go there, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, they do ask that question. They're like, dude, you're sick. I'm like, no, really, I'm not. they do, and I guess somewhere inside it's there.
Yeah.
Well, growing up with horror movies, I mean, there are elements that every horror movie needs,
right.
Okay?
Right.
And the grim stories are grim for a reason. We say that word grim for a reason. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So you're just kind of just riffing on thing. And what I would say to myself all the time was, what makes this film relevant?
Right.
What makes it relevant to today and to today's audiences? So there's a segment with the breadcrumbs that are famous for the story that we use Skittles for. You know, Skittles are relevant.
Rainbow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So people think I'm sick.
it's actually very funny because I would be, I would be on set rehearsing with the actors, and every once in a while, one of them would just kind of, we'd get to a line, and like Molly Quinn, who plays Gretel, would kind of over her shoulder go, David, that's ill.
And I would say, that's not ill, that's Shakespeare. Or the equivalent of, it's not Shakespeare. Go ahead, change it if you want.
So now, did you guys go to school to learn what you do now, Dwayne? I mean, obviously you're directing now and everything.
Right.
Did you have to go to school to learn something?
No, I didn't go to film school.
Really?
Yay! Sorry. I'm just so glad to have someone, because everyone's like, you have to go to school, you have to do this, and I'm like, no, you don't.
You know what? It's one of the great debates. It's one of the, I've been doing this a while in different areas, and it's one of the great debates. Do I go to film school? Do I not go to film school? I would say film school is a great thing, and I would say fantastic. But what I think is important about film school for most people is it's a chance when you're in your, late teens, early 20s, to sit down with a bunch of other people and learn what your opinions of filmmaking are. It's not just about what you can learn, because 90% of the stuff you learn in film school, you can actually go and rent a book.
Right.
You can go to a library. You can, get a job in the industry, which is what I did, and hang out with pros and get to work with big pros. And if your mind is open, your eyes are open, your ears are open, you're going to learn.
Mm-hmm.
The advantage to film school is that you get to sit around with a bunch of other young people and argue about, do I like black and white? Mm-hmm. Do I like the wide shot versus a medium shot? Why would you do a Dutch angle?
Mm-hmm.
And no, I don't like Dutch angles. I'm never going to do that. And your opinions may be wrong, but they're yours.
Right.
And you develop your style that way. And I think that's the advantage to film school.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I did it the other way. I came out and started working in the business, and every time I worked with a director or a producer or a writer or an actor, I just kept my eyes open and my ears open, and I was a very inquisitive person. I still am. And when somebody's doing something, a camera guy's got his fingers in the camera, I'm over there in 30 seconds going, okay, now why are you hitting that lever?
That curiosity.
And I find that that's just as important. I know a lot of people who went to film school, and quite frankly, they got a great education, but they don't know anything about the reality of what movie making is.
No practical experience.
Right. And it's funny. I've actually lectured at a few colleges over the years, and some of the questions that the kids have asked, the students have asked, I kind of go, oh, that's got to be out of a book. That's not Hollywood.
Well, there's something so that when you're on the set, because I went to acting school. I went to theater school.
Mm-hmm.
But filmmaking is completely different. So I'm approaching it from the outside, kind of like Dwayne, except, I have a background in theater and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But hearing him talk to the actors, he'll be talking to the DP. He goes, okay, well, he'll Groucho over here, and then I want him to do a little Mickey Rooney here, and he's going to do blah, blah, blah. But unless you're on set and around the industry, you don't know what those things mean.
Right.
That's true.
As soon as they make sense, like a Groucho is, you're kind of crouched over and then you're going to gradually stand up as you go into the room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but they're not teaching you that in theater school, in acting class.
Yeah.
That's a practical, real world thing.
Right.
So.
And what about the writing aspect? Is that something you always had?
No, I trained as an actor, and so I'm also acting in this movie, which is fun.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I was like, I remember you saying you were acting, and I wasn't sure what you're. Can you say what you're doing?
Yeah, well, my character's Norm, and he's the APG&E guy, so he's on the hunt for the grow house.
I see.
Not realizing at first that it's a witch.
Okay.
And then he puts it all together, and he ends up rescuing Hansel and Gretel, like in the original story. So I'm the woodsman from the original story.
Wow.
I see.
So
well, that was a spoiler.
It's okay.
We all know the story. We figured there's an oven somewhere, and it's, you know, and there's a witch. I started writing. Actually, I had a job in Kentucky. And I had to write these fractured fairy tales for this mall to do on Saturday mornings to bring, you know, people in to... So my first foray was, you know, into writing was that.
Actually, and fairy tales, and now here you are.
I know, here I am. And I realized as an actor, I had more control issues, and I've directed a lot for the stage. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, if you really have control issues, you should create the story from the ground up. So I read a lot of books.
Is that a Cappy thing, the control issue thing?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's totally. So. Yeah, it's totally, totally. And I took a few classes over at UCLA. But really, there's an amazing screenwriting book. It's called Save the Cats by a man named Blake Snyder, who passed away a couple of years ago. And he researched all of the most popular commercial success Hollywood movies and came up with a formula for that. Mm-hmm. So there is the formula.
Wow.
And then once you kind of know the formula, then you can bend the formula somewhat. But some of the principles from his book I definitely use every time I write a screenplay. Mm-hmm. Like there's a part of a screenplay that gets to be the boring part. Either it's from... The midpoint of the movie until you get to what they call the all is lost moment. So the three quarters of the way in before you hit the finale things. And he goes, well, that's when the bad guys are closing in. So I always remember that. Well, that means whatever the bad guy's going to be more in charge here and going to be leading the stray. Whereas prior to the midpoint of a movie, it's really about getting to know the character, and it's the lead who gets to experiment and find things out, and they're kind of, you know, leading the story. So when you get those ideas, then you think, oh, well, that's what has to happen, so I'm going to take that in consideration when I'm riffing on ideas for it.
Yeah, but I guess you have to have a passion for writing, right? I
mean, you have to have a passion.
It's a gift, though.
Yeah, I have had, you know, I did journal a lot when I was a kid and stuff, but screenwriting is a very particular style. I've written a novel based on a screenplay that I wrote, so it's so vastly different, because in a screenplay, you want to take three or four words and get your idea out there. The idea is to have a lot of white space on the page, but still convey your message. Whereas in a book, you know, you're talking about the mood and the texture and the feel and the, you know, all those things that you can't in a screenplay.
Right.
Now, each time I've had a chance to be on set, watching, you know, my words come to life, I've learned how to be a better writer.
Mm.
Like, that's not what I intended, but yeah, I can see where they have that on the page.
Yeah.
And so now I have to choose my words more carefully
or
give a little clue to more of the intent. Which I was always shying away from, but now, like, oh, you know, she's lost. that's the intent here. And so that was why it was great to be on set with Dwayne, to be able to see that. And also, I've directed a few short films. I'd like to direct more. And being able to sit there with them and watch them interact, he and John Smith, the director of photography, and then find out what they mean when they're going to shoot something on a long lens, what that does and what that intimacy brings, or if we're shooting on a wide angle, what that means, literally. So that was an amazing education.
Yeah. And where did you get the education on pot and all that stuff? Did you have to do some research on that?
On the TV show Weeds. Now, since then, I've had a lot of friends say, well, you know what? I could help you out on that one.
Let me give you
some. Do you have your medical card? You're like, I play the fifth.
Well, we can say Brett Hudson has a connection with... a distributor of legal stuff.
Right.
And so they've been throwing around the idea of coming up with the Black Forest High strain, because that's what it's called in the movie. It's called Black Forest High.
You guys should totally.
And that would be our McDonald's
tie-in. Is that the weirdest product placement tie-in ever?
It really
in film,
is, but it's so awesome. You can make your own brownies like with the name of the film.
No, I'm not. You know what?
That's merchandising.
I know. I'm going off.
We're just gonna take a little piece.
That is the strangest merchandising thing ever.
It would work.
It would totally work.
I want to go to all of these, you know, dispensaries and actually put the Black Forest poster up on the wall.
Yeah, there you go. With the big bud or something.
They would totally love that too.
I can do it.
All right, guys. Well, we are out of time. We have Dwayne Journey in the studio and Dave Tillman. Quickly, how did you guys meet?
Well, through a mutual friend. My friend Jason. Yeah.
And that's cool.
Dave is also, can I talk about that?
Yeah,
okay. Dave is also, he reads. He's also, he's psychic, executive.
Yes. .com.
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 Exactly.
So I originally met him because he read for me, and then we've kind of just become kind of friends in a way. So,
yeah. Cool. Yeah, how great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, guys. Give well, the...
Their Twitter on the movie is The 420 Witch.
The 420 Witch.
So you guys can find more if you go to Twitter at The 420 Witch.
Right. And then you have a website,
on Facebook,
too.
And on Facebook. So Black Forest, Hansel and Gretel, The 420 Witch on Facebook. And then it's hg420movie.com is the website.
Okay. Awesome. So, guys, check it out.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
sure. Thank you. It's been a treat to see you again after all this time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And congratulations on the film and good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Have a great weekend.
Yes, you too. And we'll see you all on Monday.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Brigetta, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Sam in the Morning with Brigetta is an LA Talk Radio production, where we say what we want.